You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. This is episode 958. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the changing face of SEO and online content in 2025. We've got a true expert. We've got Jono Anderson with us. You formerly used to work for Yoast. He's seen as a real influencer in the SEO scene. It should be a fabulous discussion. So, Jono, can you give the tribe a quick 10-20 second intro, and then when we go into the main part of the show, we will delve into your background in a bit more detail, Jono.
Sure, I was ready for 20-minute intro. That's going to be quite extensive.
20 seconds. Yeah, sure. We have had almost 20-minute intros from some of the guests.
Impressive. I don't know if I've got that much interesting stuff. So yeah, so I started out as a bedroom web developer 100 years ago before I discovered WordPress, and fell into building websites for small businesses, butchers, bakers, etc. Fell into agency world, learned about politics and clients and business and consulting. Spent some time at some tool vendors doing big data crunching stuff before that was cool. And then spent 5 years at Yoast, where I joined as kind of special projects and R&D to do what should our roadmap look like. And by that time I left was running product and SEO and going, how do you build Yoast for 13 million websites on three platforms, yada, yada. Yeah, super fun.
Yep, that's a great intro. And I've got my ever-patient co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself? You look a bit happier today, Kurt.
Well, I'm going to be a little more transparent. I have fasted last week. I fasted a day this week, and I'm down about 12 pounds.
Whoa.
So I got a lightness in my step. What can I say?
He looks mean. He looks mean and slim, folks. So there we go.
Not yet.
Like I say, we're going to have a great discussion about SEO. We always do this around 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you ever, you can always join the conversation and with your questions. You just go to the WP Tonic YouTube channel and you'll see the live show there. And you can always join us live with your questions and contributions if they're shareable. But before we go into this main interview, I've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. Also want to point out we've got a fabulous created list of the best WordPress plugins and services for the WordPress professional, plus some special offers from the sponsors. It's a great resource. It will save you a load of time and money. You can find all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved WordPress professionals? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get by that page. I've made a career in disappointing people. It always brings a smile to most people when I say that, Jono, but I don't know. So, Jono, let's delve in. So you gave a bit of insight about your background. So let's jump forward then. So what led to you working with Yoast? How did you get involved with the mammoth That was just...
Sure. So I think I gave a present. So I've been working with WordPress for years, right? I discovered it, I think, around 2005, when I'd been working with an agency who'd built their own CMS, and it was awful, and it was a nightmare to work with. And then I'd worked at a bunch of agencies, and they...
I worked for an agency that did that. And they just loved it. They thought it was the bee's knees, you know.
Yeah.
And it was terrible as well.
But it keeps people employed, right? Doesn't it? Reinventing and fixing the wheel over and over again. I think that's a big part of the problem.
Every true developer thinks their internal CRM is the best.
Oh, just build a CMS. Yeah, see it this week.
I'm just going to do it in the afternoon.
Yeah, so there was a bit of that. So I'd felt the pain of what does not working with WordPress look like. And on the side was still building small business websites using WordPress. It was revolutionary. Custom post types were amazing. This was all incredible. Plugin ecosystem was great. And still kind of found myself fighting against all these non-WordPress sites we were building in agency world. Super frustrating. So I gave a conference talk, I think in maybe 2013 at a big event, where I was saying, here's all the frustrations and here's the gap. Like, if you're marketing people or SEO people, here's how to understand how bad the thing you have is and all the good things WordPress do and how you then take that even further. And I think in that talk, I'd said, don't use Yoast because all your competitors are using Yoast and it gets them to 80% out of the box. But then they stop thinking because they've got the basics in place. So nobody's competing in that, like the gap between 80% and 100%. And I would say you really ought to apply critical thinking, build from scratch, do it all yourself, which was mad in hindsight. But it got me on the radar of Yoast de Balk, founder of Yoast, as a kind of naysayer and hypocrite. And then bumped into him over the course of various years and various events and got talking and very quickly kind of drunk the WordPress Kool-Aid, having come at it from an outsider, and realized that actually the getting...
You became part of the cult, did you?
Absolutely, yeah. And I don't know whether I still am. That's quite interesting. But yeah, I drank the Kool-Aid. I wore the sandals.
Drank the Kool-Aid, you around the campfire, singing the WordPress song.
And because I found so much of what motivated me was frustration about how bad most of the web was. And I was getting irritated with the things that I was seeing being built and irritated with the things I was auditing. And I became a bit obsessed about what if everybody was just 1% better? And what if we just didn't have the number of clients who hand built an XML sitemap from scratch when this is a solved problem, just install the plugin. And I found myself saying that more and more often. And then it got to the point where I started saying, oh, can we just make the plugin itself a bit better? Can we do these things? And then, yeah, fate came along and I ended up then having to do the work to make it better and improve the things across the board. Yeah.
So you become a bit of a voice around SEO and then you met the founder. You kind of gelled with him and then a position came around, or did he offer you a position?
Yeah, we kind of invented a position. He was looking to do less public speaking and travel, which was something I was doing prolifically at the time. I was speaking at maybe two events a month around Europe and on the road constantly. And he was wanting to do less of that, which is important in the SEO space because so much of it is driven by whose opinion do you trust, right? In a space where there are no codified rules and it is all just opinion and testing, there is a bit of a kind of cult of personality that goes on. So that was a big part of the role. But then also, it's such a fast moving space. And that's, I think that's truer than ever, that it really needed another set of brains and eyes to go, what should we be building? Not just for tomorrow, but for 3 years from now. And how do you get that bet right? Because there's so much changes week on week. Well, how do you know what good looks like? So yeah, there was a lot of time spent doing ideation for roadmap stuff and working out what the core direction was. And should we get on board this Gutenberg bandwagon? And how much time do we want to invest in that? And is that the future of content editing? Maybe. So yeah, super interesting.
Oh, there you go. Nothing's changed.
No.
Over to you, Kurt.
I'm listening to it and, you know, I heard the cult of personality. I heard, you know, sitting around the fire pit, right? Being part of the cult, and then wondering if you were still part of the cult, right? Which seems to be a lot of people are in that wonder space right now. I want to switch gears though, because if we're going to talk about SEO, I feel like my own personal experience, I do like an SEO kind of search on my agency or on one of my projects, and I get a certain result. And then I go to Grok or AI or let's say Perplexity, and I ask a question and I get a different result. And people seem to be spouting things like SEO is dead or all these weird things. What do you see as the next biggest trends in SEO over the next, just say, like a year to a year and a half?
Sure. So I think about this a lot, and I'm talking about it a lot on stages. I think that SEO, the way we typically thought about it, at least in terms of how most small to medium businesses have thought about it, is very much dead. I think that content marketing in particular, as a phrase, is something that we need to put away now. I think so many websites are built, designed and built and created and managed without really much thought to what is the role of the content on this thing. And if we look at the rise of AI, the lowering thresholds of effort to create a business and sell things online, the commodification of everything, then what is left that helps you determine, should I buy from this business or that business? It's their narrative, it's their story, it's their opinions, it's the things that they do and stand for beyond just fulfilling, I want to buy this product or get this service. And in theory, the way that we communicate that to an audience is the content, right? But you look at the reality, and everybody has a terrible blog that is full of terrible articles because they've been told that they should do some keyword research and they should pick this subset of keywords and they should get the intern to decide on these and they should publish two articles a week and have it written by an author called Admin that's completely untrustworthy and doesn't say anything that is in any way meaningful or differentiated from any of their minion competitors who've gone through the same process. And all of these websites have content that doesn't connect with the consumer, doesn't tell a story, doesn't actually help or answer anyone's questions, but that has worked until now, right? That has meant that you rank for some keywords and maybe you attract 1,000 visitors and you manage to convert 2% of those to filling in your form. And that very much kind of was the whole model until fairly recently. And now what's changed is over the last maybe 2 years or so, we've really seen Google ramp up how often it just solves people's questions in situ. So if I'm searching for basic questions with known answers that don't require a rocket scientist or original thought, it will just give me the information. So then the whole kind of economic pillar of I'm going to do keyword research, publish content, get it crawled, get it discovered, get it indexed, get it ranked, drive traffic, drive conversions, just stops working because Google stops sending that traffic because it has no incentive to. So that gets us to yesterday. The next bit I think is super interesting because it's that, but even worse, which is there are so many topics, so many bits of human knowledge and types of searches where Google now understands the problem well enough that it doesn't need any new content. So I think recipes is a really good example for this. I think there are only so many ways you can combine all the ingredients on the planet using all the techniques, which don't change particularly often, to create, say, a lasagna. So where historically I might have gone, I'm going to do some keyword research, I'm going to do this lasagna recipe, Google doesn't want that or need it, right? And even more than that, if I do search for blueberry risotto salmon lasagna, which I definitely shouldn't because that would be obnoxious, but they can synthesize a recipe on the fly because they understand that problem space well enough to not need content as an input. And we start to see this happening more and more often in more and more spaces. Before I'm searching for holidays, I will search for longer, more complex queries because Google will train me that it can just solve my answers in situ because it has enough an understanding of the inventory of the content on the web to not need a third-party intermediary. So the days of publishing content to try and drive keyword-centric traffic to try and convert some of it are well and truly done, which is pretty scary because nobody seems to be particularly clear on what happens next or how you incentivize businesses and publishers to produce truly useful and new content if Google's just going to summarize it or ChatGPT is just going to summarize it, etc. Because, yeah, I'm talking a lot about Google, but it's the same principle of these other systems. They are disintermediating. While historically, we've relied on websites. I want to search a thing. I want to pick a website. I want to get my answer. All of that process disappears. So now I just have this omniscient supercomputer cutting out all the research process for me, almost going as far as making my decisions on my behalf, which is the next step we get to with agents, right? So how do you do SEO? And I think the hard answer that everybody's starting to come to realize is that you actually need to build a brand and you actually need your content to win hearts and minds, not to convince and convert. And that means authentically producing and providing resources, of giving your best expertise away for free, of helping an audience 6 months before they enter a research and a buying cycle, of running billboards so that you influence what and how and when they search before they search, and already having convinced the machine that you're the right fit for an audience before they search. And this is a super hard pill to swallow, because you can't outsource any of that, and you can't mechanize any of that, and you can't just have a blog and publish some articles and ChatGPT produce that. So yeah, I think a lot of businesses are going to find that they are burning money on doing types of SEO that no longer works.
I'm listening to you, and my brain is transcribing three different events in my head, which happens to me a lot.
Especially when he's working with me, Joe.
I am seeing what I consider to be these scams in my, you know, whatever social feed, right? It's going to be some short video where some dude is like hyped up on 20 cups of coffee and he's saying, yeah, you know, content marketing is dead. You don't need courses. You don't need webinars. You don't need this. I'm going to show you the secret. You know, click here.
Buy my book. Yep. And it's a book about how to sell books to people who want to buy books on Tinder. Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I've got some clients where their whole model is helping people publish their first book, right? And it's like, okay, well, we see that that exactly hasn't gone so well either.
Yeah.
And so when I think about new people coming to market that don't have the advantage of a brand or recognition, a name, it's very, very difficult. I have been in the podcast game for over 5 years and I'm finally getting recognized, but it takes a lot of time and a lot of skin in the game. Do you think, and if you answer me, it's going to be weird, but like, I've actually gone back to like, get involved in the Chamber of Commerce, get involved in the Entrepreneur Networking, person to person handshakes, networking, communicating through LinkedIn as a person to person. But it's not what customers want to hear. I run a WordPress agency and people want me to work to their website.
Yeah.
And I don't have the magic.
No. And this is a huge problem in the whole SEO industry. I've been talking recently about broadening the scope of SEO in the same way. But yeah, the market and the audience don't want to hear it. Why? Quite often, the best SEO advice I might be able to give is improve the packaging of your products. Because when people have a good experience getting it, they might be more likely to socially share. They might be more likely to recommend. They might be more likely to link, but it's more likely that you get a whole bunch of second order effects that influence how Google and ChatGPT perceive how people perceive your brand. All of that is quite abstract and it's quite disconnected from what HTML should I have on my web pages, right? But that's less important. That said, the thing I think that smaller businesses and new businesses definitely can do to compete is niche down and move fast and have a better website. So I spend a lot of time doing kind of enterprise level consultancy for big companies, and all of their websites are garbage, like objectively bad, full of errors, slow as hell, poorly maintained. Nobody knows who owns which bit. And if you want to make a change over here, it will take 2 years and they'll get it wrong. Whereas if you're a small business or a new business, you can go, right, I'm on WordPress. I can install a plugin. I can start a community. I can change my contact form system. I can do a piece of research and I can present it really nicely with a block editor. I can, instead of trying to be the best bakery in the world, I can be the best, I don't know, vegan chocolate cupcake bakery. You can change, you can pivot, you can do all those things. I don't think you can compete at scale without an established brand, but you can create a laser-focused smaller brand and you can move fast. And to your point, I think people will buy from people more than ever now. I think that's more important, continues to be. And Google have clocked this. Like for years, they've had this EEAT set of recommendations where experience, expertise, authority, and trust are super important. Not because they're...
Sure, Google says a lot of things, don't they?
Yeah, but this I buy, right? I think a lot,
those cockroaches, I take it with a pinch of salt myself.
Yeah, no, for sure. They're definitely looking out for their interests. And I think part of why they're pushing this so hard is because it does allow them to sort through the AI-generated slop and the other stuff. But I think there is something of a good ideology to it, which is... how does a small business compete and how do you compete if reputation and that kind of personal thing is the only thing that matters? I think there is value in having a blog that isn't just articles, but is in fact differentiated opinion that is funny or divisive or original research or something that's creating value and that's attached to a human with a face.
I just want to put this to you because fundamentally, I agree with your outlook and the key things you're saying, but I also take it not specifically targeting or attacking what you've outlined, because a lot of what you've outlined, I agree with the medium long term. But let's take WordPress. Now, yes, search traffic through articles has reduced because of what you outlined. The basic questions are being answered without going to a website. But one of the biggest, how to put this without me being sued, one of the biggest purveyors of online answers in WordPress has a network of plugins and the actual content is absolute shit, and it's been shit for years. Yeah, I don't see any sign that Google's really attacking this parasite. And now he's not doing anything illegal. It's all grey hat internal link networks.
Yeah, if you have 10 big websites and they all just happen to endorse each other in a way that...
Yeah, so back to the actual... You're saying, and I've heard this for years, oh, the content has to be better quality. And then I look at this cockroach and what he's doing and I think, I'll give it a break. And I've gone to so many SEO conferences and heard this nonsense. And then I see in practice... this company and what it's up to that dominates in WordPress. And he's just an absolute cockroach of an individual. And everybody that works for him is a cockroach, as far as I'm concerned. But that's my opinion, folks. It doesn't add up, basically.
No, agreed. It's one of the great frustrations that... I spend a lot of my time saying, here is what good looks like, exactly for the medium to long term, on the premise that... You can cheat the system. There are tactics you can use which will...
I think Google are well aware. They just don't really care, basically. I don't think Google cares it.
Well, they don't care who wins as long as there is a winner, right? So they can't penalise all the bad stuff, because then there's entire industries where there's nothing and they can't return like an empty page. I do see a lot more brands, a lot more websites, not brands, getting smacked down recently over the last year or so, which is quite therapeutic. But yeah, there are people who get away with it who just shouldn't. And it is very frustrating that they continue to do so. Hopefully at some point that all goes wrong.
Now, the other area before we go for a break is, you know, I think I got penalized because I got very aggressive, but I've managed to get about half of my traffic back by doing various things. But also about brand, I noticed, like with YouTube, I've become very big on YouTube and I put a lot of effort into it, and the audience is growing quite substantially for my YouTube channel. But I noticed a behaviour of mine, and I don't think I'm a bit wacko, but not too wacko. I notice on the YouTube I don't watch American television because there's only so many true crimes and murders I can watch. Yeah. Because if you watch American television, you just want to commit suicide straight away. But I'm a consumer of something much worse, which is YouTube. Talk about a doom loop. But I notice that if I sense that the YouTube video is being made offshore and they're using AI, I tend to unsubscribe from the channel. There are some channels that are using AI in a very creative way for in comedy, in satire, a bit like Spitting Image. And I do subscribe to a couple of these channels because they're very creative. But in general, the channels that have got kind of obviously a AI voiceover and a mishmash of images and videos. If I sense it's AI, I unsubscribe. I want somebody that's a personalized influencer. Am I peculiar, or do you, and is that around what you mean by brand? Is that people want a person or a small group of people that they really trust their opinion on?
Yeah, that I think for now, certainly whilst we're in this kind of uncanny valley phase with AI, I definitely think that's true. Whether or not it remains true in the long term is interesting. I think certainly in some of the adult sectors, you see some incredible rises of fake people and fake influencers, not even fake, but artificial influencers who have huge subscriberships. So I think, yes, definitely the idea that I subscribe to an individual or a group whose opinions I trust, who will guide me and keep me safe, is a huge thing. And where historically that's been big brands, now we can be more smaller and localized and specialized. I think YouTube's a really good example for this. I will follow channels because I can rely on the publisher of that channel to create content that I know that I'll like, that will be yada, yada, yada. But I think, yeah, maybe as we get more used to AI, it becomes more normal for those people to be synthetic as well. Who knows? That's an interesting future. You raised an interesting point, I think, on YouTube and beyond in general, that part of the kind of whole SEO thing forever has been, how do I get more traffic to my website? But as that becomes less of a thing, because there's less traffic and fewer clicks to go around, I think there's definitely needs to be more of a shift to, how do I get more engagement with my content? And that might be on YouTube. It might be on Google Discover. It might be in Google Merchant Center. And that's increasingly and WordPress has an interesting role to play here, right? As a kind of hub for where does this content live and where is it published? And maybe it's the center of a kind of ecosystem. But then he starts thinking even further. It gets super interesting because then you've got to say, what is a search engine? Because is Reddit a search engine? Is TikTok a search engine? Is Amazon? Is Tinder a search engine? All of these things have people searching and problem solving. My content might be there.
Especially TikTok, isn't it? Because it's an area that I, for somebody of my age, I think I'm reasonably sophisticated about social media. But TikTok, I'm not engaged. Well, I say that, I'm not engaged in Instagram, but I understand it. But TikTok, but there's whole businesses, a whole e-commerce businesses.
And
their whole strategy is based on TikTok, is it not?
Yes, and it's quite transient. So my wife's very deeply into TikTok, so I don't have to be. But we got a dog a couple of years ago, and we've spent a huge amount of money on things for the dog that she has discovered, researched, engaged with followers, built loyalty to certain publishers, etc., on TikTok, spent money with, and decked out our dog food, clothing, leads, etc. Journeys that would historically have happened on search engines, and there would have been clicks to websites, all of that now happening on TikTok. And I think WordPress has missed the boat a bit on this, that there is a role for a website in that ecosystem somewhere while you're driving traffic back. Maybe these transient platforms are very good for discovery and maybe brand awareness and loyalty, but you still want to be kind of maybe bringing stuff back into your central pillar. Maybe the other way around. But yeah, it feels like there should be a relationship there, and we just missed the boat entirely.
I hope the dog you bought was a British bulldog.
No, it's a Dachshund. She's a tiny little...
You've got to get a British bulldog.
Yeah.
We're going to go for our break, folks. It's been a fabulous discussion. I've really enjoyed it with Jono so far. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convesio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convesio at convesio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. We've had a fabulous discussion with Jonah Anderson. Before we go into the second half, I just want to point out, if you're a web freelancer, developer, and you're taking on a large membership community project and you're looking for a great hosting partner and a great back-end partner as well that's got a ton of experience in building these larger websites, why don't you look at partnership with WP Tonic? We've got some fabulous packages for you. We all know we take on a really large project in a niche area and it's a bit nerve-wracking, but if you're looking for a great partner, we're the people that's got the experience. You can find more by going over to wp-tonic.com/partners. wp-tonic.com/partners. Let's build something special together. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, so far I'm really, really enjoying this interview, Jono. So thanks for coming. I'm going to switch gears just a hair, and I want to get, everyone's probably wondering, like, oh my God, he worked for Yoast. Like, everyone knows what Yoast is that's in the WordPress space. So, spill the beans, man. What were some of the biggest surprises you had working at Yoast?
Oh, super interesting. There's a few. I think, one was just how complex it is to support a large plugin that is broadly used across the ecosystem. So I think when I joined, we were like on 10 million websites. When I left, it was about 13. And that really is every conceivable combination of hardware, software, hosting, plugin, theme, etc. And the amount of work required even to ship a simple filter, like the most trivial kind of level of WordPress development you can imagine. I just want like a one-line thing that just changes this to this. The amount of hardening and testing, not just in development, but in hours. Like, we had teams of people firing up instances of every conceivable combination of these things and going, does it work? Does it break? All the testing scripts. The mechanization of that process, absolutely incredible. And that speaks, I think, more to how brittle bits of WordPress are than necessarily to how sophisticated Yoast was as a company. But yeah, that was quite fascinating. That was my first kind of real deep dive into the WordPress ecosystem, having mostly just been a casual user. That was fascinating.
I work a lot with Lifter LMS directly, and you know, the user base there will say, we need this integration, or we want this feature, this button should be periwinkle, right? And then 3 months later, they're like, how's it coming with my request? Like, their expectation is that, you know, there's a
on-call. Your request is in a black hole, never to be dead.
Yeah.
And to your point, it's like, you have to make sure it works with everything.
Yep.
The responsibility, it's huge. Was part of that surprise for you, just recognizing like the turnaround time on things? Was it magnified?
Yeah, it was huge. It would take us months to ship something that I could code in 20 minutes. And not because of anybody's failings or that anyone was told the processes were broken, just that those processes needed to exist because the cost of shipping something that breaks stuff, even if it only breaks, I don't know, 0.1% of your users' sites, that's still thousands of support emails. So the fact that the support team was so big and so constantly in motion, like there's this big clockwork system of people responding to emails and routing to help articles, etc., at a scale which was quite incredible, because stuff inevitably slips through the gap. So it turns out that there's this edge case with Elemental when you've also got this thing installed, the idea that you can't possibly anticipate and you can't test for because you can't have every combination of all the things. So yeah, that was super interesting. And we had armies of people on rotation and quite a sophisticated setup in Slack and GitHub and eventually Jira, where everything talked to each other, and there's pipelines and workflows for all of this. So I think what was quite interesting was that Yoast's brand looks quite cutesy deliberately because it's designed to have a certain appeal in the market, but there was quite a sophisticated development and DevOps pipeline behind that. We were doing really smart stuff with Cloudflare and EdgeWorkers and our own systems and platforms for things like, how does the licensing engine work? And how do we dog food our own stuff so our own site is perfect and lightning fast, et cetera? So yeah, the dichotomy of cutesy cartoons and then this very sophisticated workhorse behind it was quite cool. What else? I found one of the other things that was super interesting was just how little people actually manage their websites. I think one of the things we struggled with, and I'm sure they still do, is if you just install the plugin and turn it on, it definitely helps make your kind of technical SEO and foundations better, but it certainly won't help you compete or differentiate or cut through the market because you've got to do, like, you've got to actually, the optimized bit is like an active verb. And people don't even log in. They just have websites, right? They're not updating plugins. They're not going and writing content. They're not strategizing. They don't even log in. So much of our time, we had, I can't remember what the percentages were, but a significant amount of people who didn't renew their premium subscriptions after the first year because they weren't seeing any value because they'd never turned it on. They'd never configured, like they bought the thing and hadn't even understood that they needed to install it or use it or go in and click on it. And drop-offs are all stages of that funnel, right? It's not just that there was a bad or a missing email. It's that legitimately people don't seem to comprehend that they need to go into WP Admin and do stuff, even just to configure the plugin and to go, yes, I have uploaded my logo. And yes, I have named my organization. And yes, I have like fundamental basics. So that was quite surprising. And I think that's a broader challenge with WordPress, right? The onboarding process is so bad. The discovery process is so bad. People aren't incentivized to actively manage their sites. I think Joost de Valk at the moment is talking a lot about it's a very good content publishing system, arguably, but a terrible content management system. And I quite like that narrative.
I was thinking back to, I was working with a client and I consider myself a pretty decent writer. I mean, I'm not great, but I'm decent. I got a couple of books out. And they had the Yoast platform fully operated, fully. And their process was like, here's an outline, these keywords, this, that, this title, this meta thing, this. And I got to tell you, Jono, at the end of the day, when I finished writing the article, I realized I don't like writing so much anymore.
Yeah.
Writing for SEO is not, it wasn't my voice. It didn't sound like me. I didn't even really like the content when I was done, but it met criteria and all the like.
Oh, that's frustrating. Yeah. That was such an educational challenge, right? And I think there were some missteps in there because you shouldn't ever have to compromise the content in order to make it SEO friendly, right? There is a really strong argument that it needs to be simply written and very easily readable. Fine. Okay. Because not all of your audience are experts, et cetera. And part of your objective of SEO is reach a broad audience, not just your specialist niche. So yeah, structure and simplicity matter, but you should never be losing tone. You should never be compromising the flow in order to kind of artificially inject a bunch of keywords. I think people took the traffic lights very, very literally at the expense of their content.
Well, the reason they did it because Google benefited from doing it.
Yeah. Especially with if you look at ChatGPT now and all the kind of SEO industry is talking about chunking their content and having you to carve it up.
Do you think, honestly, the reason this, I'm only surmising this, do you think, you know, obviously the founders of Google, you know, their initial paper when they were at Stanford and they had the concept of external links being external judgment of the quality of article, enormously powerful, and like all powerful ideas, the core is very simplistic, but the consequences is amazing concept. But do you think Google were just finding through the cockroach that I mentioned in the first half of the show that through networks, private networks, grey hat SEO, that the power of external links, and then using authoritative news business websites that were selling external links, and then you had offshore websites. I mean, that the whole concept just played out. So they were using neural networks about 4 years ago to really reduce their their reliance on external links has just been, they knew that that game was finished because it had just been grey hat out of existence. And so they were using neural networks themselves. And, you know, but the problem with neural networks is it is sophisticated, but it's also not sophisticated in the same breath. Is there any, you're the expert, I'm not. Do you think there's anything to what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the SEO industry step by step broke large chunks of the web, right? They broke directories because they spammed them to death. They broke comments. Who has a comments form open on a WordPress site nowadays? It would be insane because it would fill it with spam immediately. And that is entirely because most of the SEO industry are scum. Quote. And still to this day, most SEO agencies will talk a good game and talk about helping you brand and earn to get visibility, etc. But they're just buy links. And that still remains true. And so, yeah, Google are trying. And I know we've broken other stuff. We broke authorship, broke a whole bunch of stuff. Really unpleasant. Google are trying really, really hard to mitigate the impact of that. Because if you can just turn money into links that affect the PageRank algorithm and their propensity to ranking, that sucks because it creates a very us versus them web. It means you can just buy your way into success. It subsequently pollutes the rest of the link graph. So yes, their big move to essentially AI in a black box and LLMs and a neural approach rather than heuristics helped them a lot, but now they're stuck in a place where they don't really understand, quote unquote, the algorithm, because there isn't really an algorithm. There are many, many, many.
Well, it's so complicated that they don't even understand it themselves.
No, and I don't think they could. No, so much of it is by design, black box LLM AI stuff, and it's hundreds of small systems that feed into each other. So now we enter an age where, not only do people continue to find exploits that work when they shouldn't, but also there are many, many sites who are doing the right thing and doing good things and then accidentally falling afoul of the machine where it's penalized them or downvoted them, despite them objectively following all of Google's guidelines and requirements and adding value and doing all the right stuff. And Google can't fix this. Like, they are so deep into a design model where the machine knows best and we will not touch them. We'll tinker some of the inputs and evaluate the outputs, but the machine itself is sacred and sacrosanct and can't be understood. And I think it's really interesting that they're now stuck with this model.
Well, you saw it in this desperate attempt and this attempt with Reddit and other question and answer forums, you know, promoting answers from 6 years ago.
And off the record, I had a really interesting chat with some Googlers that they knew that the impact of artificially inflating Reddit's visibility would be bad, but it was less bad than just letting the AI slop take over. So they're not in a great position.
But it was just pure desperation, was it not? You would agree with that.
And,
You know, some of the stuff on Reddit's great. A lot of it's totally bullshit. And a lot of it's been spanned anyway. You know, this whole industry's about how to set up artificial red edit answers and questions just to span Google. You know, that whole thing is pathetic, really. Back over to you, Kurt.
Well, I'm driving us back to WordPress on this question, and that is And I hope your answer is positive because, you know, I stick a lot of my career on it, but you still see WordPress as one of the best website building platforms connected to SEO? Or are you leaning in other directions?
I think the short answer is yes, but with a big asterisk and a lot of caveats, right? Unsurprisingly. I think natively WordPress out of the box has now fallen a long way behind the competitors, the Wixes, the Squarespaces in terms of SEO. Those platforms are not great at SEO, but they are better than native WordPress because they acknowledge that SEO is a concept, which we don't like. It's plug-in territory, which is already problematic. I think if you install Yoast and or maybe one of the other leading SEO plugins, then yes, you have far and away the best SEO platform that the web has to offer. So much of my time consulting with brands where they get me in to go, our website's not performing or whatever. So much of that time is taking what they've got, which is often a proprietary CMS or another CMS or different sort of CMS off the shelf or some homegrown JavaScript monstrosity they've built. So much of my time is trying to reverse engineer and get that into at least the position that WordPress comes out of the box. Like, I will spend hundreds of hours working with big companies going, can we at least get this to where WordPress comes out natively? Never mind all the Yoast stuff, etc. So yeah, if SEO is part of what you want to do and compete on, there is no other option than WordPress, which has some pros and cons, right? Because it's got its challenges and otherwise. We expanded Yoast to Shopify while I was still there. That was quite interesting. I think if you're pure play e-commerce and you still want to do SEO, Shopify can be an option, but it's super frustrating to work with. And the way that it juggles themes and code and doesn't really have a concept of structured meta, it's frustrating and cumbersome. And whilst the Yoast SEO add-on for that solves some of those problems, it's fundamentally never going to have the same kind of just gets everything right level that WordPress does. Like, so much of my time at Yoast was thousands of small SEO things that most normal humans shouldn't ever need to care about, that they'll never notice, which had some interesting marketing challenges because how do you sell the stuff that no one cares about, right? Part of the premise is this fixes all the stuff behind the scenes. But silly things like no index HTTP headers on certain RSS feeds that... super trivial, but 1,000 of those small things, which no other platform will ever get anywhere near. They'll never catch up because of the kind of scale at which our WordPress moves, or at least used to move when we still had a contributor pool. So yeah, if SEO is a thing, the one argument I would make against that, maybe if you want to move super quickly and you don't want to build a long-term brand and you want to spin up a website that's good enough, that's only going to live for 2 weeks, get it on Squarespace, get it on Wix, get it on one of those other platforms. But if you want to do it right, quote unquote, and you're in it for the long term, there really isn't a choice other than WordPress. Like, you want to add a form next week? Great. Here's BuddyPress or BBPress and it just works and the SEO is taken care of. You want to do a thing with Gravity and contact forms? Great. You just do the thing and it works. The interoperability of all of these systems and the existence of all the hooks and filter systems, yada, yada, it just works in a way that nothing else ever does. And I don't think anything else will ever catch up.
You mentioned Shopify, and it wasn't one of our original questions, but now I'm curious, does the choice of shopping cart in the WordPress space make a huge difference from an SEO perspective? Like, do I need WooCommerce or ShortCart or ThriveCart or?
No, I don't think so, really. I think the cart itself, not so much. The product display page, the PDPs and the PLPs, yes. Like, if you're selling online, then how well do these pages rank and how well do they do the job is great, a huge deal. But I don't see a huge amount of difference in the systems you're using to populate. It's the product content. Is there an image gallery? It's just the thing load quickly. Maybe there's some second order effects from things like, does this have this checkout experience looks familiar because everybody now knows what a WooCommerce checkout looks like, right? And maybe you get a higher conversion rate, which means there's more people likely to tweet about you, which means more people give you links. You know, maybe there's some of that, but technically, no, there's not a huge difference, I don't think.
Nice. Thanks. Jonathan, over to you.
So are there any kind of AI tools that you've been using on a semi-regular basis? Is there anything that you like?
Yeah, I'm going to be super boring because it's an obvious answer, but one is ChatGPT, which gets...
You don't get any marks for that, actually. Yeah, no, you're too close to we ask these questions.
I know, right? But there's two things I've done, which I see many people not doing. One is go in and configure the personalization instructions, like tell it who you are and what you like. I've got a really long set of content in there about how do I develop and what kinds of things do I know and what am I interested in that really alters how it responds quite profoundly. And the other is I structure all of my stuff in projects and give it project level context, which is really like if I've got a client or a project or a piece of consultancy, having all that group's nice. The other one, which I probably also won't get any points for, is Cursor, which has tripled my speed as a developer, which is quite awesome. But again, I've configured the heck out of it, right? I've gone in and added a whole bunch of system prompts and I have specific context for individual clients and projects, spent the time setting it up and tinkering with it. And it's now ridiculously fast and accurate at, if I've got a WordPress theme that's reasonably well structured, it can extrapolate out from that. It can write new functionality. I, shipped my first plugin a couple of months ago, that I'd had a beta version of kicking around for about 5 years and never quite finished. And I tore it all down and rebuilt it from scratch in Cursor in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks maybe. And it's now like 20 times the size and complexity and sophistication than it was. And I'm super proud of it. But all the heavy lifting was done by Cursor. I orchestrated and puppeteered and tweaked, but it did the legwork. Really cool.
Fascinating. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, I get the last question. So if you were Doctor Who and had a TARDIS, or if you had an Einstein like H.G. Wells, and you traveled back to the beginning of your career, the very beginning of your career, knowing what you know now, what would the advice be that you would give yourself?
Oh, change nothing. Change absolutely nothing. No, I think I would tell myself that it is okay and maybe even good to strive for perfection. I think common advice says don't chase perfection. I think that's why many, many websites and businesses and maybe even people are mediocre. I think as soon as you settle for anything less than, yeah, you're likely never going to reach perfection in the areas that you're striving for. But as soon as you settle for anything less than that, you inevitably end up at 6 out of 10. And I think part of what attracted me to SEO is that it's competitive, but a lot of what drives success is, are you, in theory, legitimately better, more good, more closer to perfect than the other stuff? And the whole first section of my career was driven by frustration. I was annoyed that the websites I was working on were average, that the businesses I was consulting for were limited and constrained, and that this thing was slow, or this thing was broken, or this thing was underdeveloped, or we cut this, yada, yada, yada. And that frustration drove me, which was super useful. It got me here, but I spent so many years being angry at the web and at businesses and stuff. So I think, and nobody else seemed to feel the same way. This kind of drive for, can we make this better? Why is this not the best thing it can be? And I guess part of that is, like, agency models aren't designed to do that. They're designed to survive another month by tricking the client into thinking you've done something useful with your time. But I think I'm telling previous me that it's okay to strive for perfection, and that there is value in that. And that increase, I think more than ever now, again, in an age where everything is commodified, that closing that distance to perfect, rather than going, what's MVP? How do we go good enough? Going, what does perfect look like? How do we get as close as possible to that? I think that's hugely important.
Nice. Thanks. Jonathan?
Yeah, we're going to wrap up the podcast part of the show. Do you have to leave it at the hour, Jono, or going for another 15 minutes? So that's great. We're going to have some bonus content, folks. You can watch the bonus content and the rest of the interview by going over to the WP-Tonic YouTube channel, and you can watch the whole interview plus the bonus content there. We're going to wrap up the podcast part of the show. So, Jono, what's the best way for people to keep up to date with your latest thoughts and what you're up to?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter. I think probably no one else is. So I'm also on Threads.
You get top marks by keep calling it Twitter.
I'm
not using X. He can call it whatever he wants to.
Yeah, exactly. Also, Google me. Come to jonoalderson.com, which is my delightful obsessive side project, is how do I make that website as perfect as possible? Scores 100 on Core Web Vitals. It's handcrafted HTML. It's WordPress taken to the extreme. So yeah, if you want to nerd out, go check that out.
Right. And Kirk, what's the best way for people to find out more about what you are up to and your latest thoughts?
Well, with my business, everything's under the name Manana Nomas. And on LinkedIn, if you want to connect person to person, just send me a connection request on LinkedIn. I am the only Kurt von Onen on LinkedIn. Once you find me, you know you got me.
Nice. There was a John Alderson who was a landscape gardener whose business I've accidentally destroyed by being quite prevalent on Google. I think about that a lot. It's not cool.
If you want to support the show, folks, and we are growing, please share this podcast, and also think about subscribing to the WP Tonic YouTube channel. I'm getting close to 10,000 subscribers. I want to bust through that in the next couple of months. Your support would be really, really appreciated. So think about subscribing to the YouTube channel and also share this podcast. I'm always amazed at the quality of people that agree to come on the show. We are fully booked out for the next couple of months. We've got some great guests and interviews coming up. We'll see you next week, folks. Thanks so much. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.